All right. As I mentioned before the break, there has been a bill, House Bill 227, which has basically been called the Solar Bill, which this is a piece of legislation that has been brought forward, sponsored by Representative James Gooch. And basically it would reduce the amount of incentives that you get for converting your home to solar energy. It would change the system that exists now called net metering. And now there were some changes from this bill, House Bill 227, when it was in the House. It narrowly passed the House, and it has now moved on to the Senate, where there is a crucial vote tomorrow. Jamie Clark has been sort of the spokesperson, I guess. Is it fair to say, Jamie, for the solar industry? You've been one of the point people, if not the point person, on this legislation up in Frankfort.
You know, I am one of many people. I just happen to have a bigger mouth than most, so a lot of people are pointing at me as a spokesperson. But
well
but now there's...
And you do have some political chops. I mean, that's how I first met you. And in fact, we'd even had you on the show a time or two to talk politics at one point or another a few years ago. So maybe they saw that too.
I am guilty. I've been involved in politics since I was a little kid. I mean, I honestly voted in every election, every primary and general since I turned 18. So I'm a bit of a geek on this, and I never thought that I would use it for my professional career, or hopefully to keep them from killing my professional career. Let's put it that way.
First of all, though, solar hasn't exactly, and correct me if I'm wrong, taken off. What do you got, about 1,000 homes in Kentucky that have converted to solar power?
Yeah, the statistic right now is solar makes up 0.1% of Kentucky's energy portfolio. Mm-hmm. So it's not exactly like the big bad wolf that's taking over the state.
All right. Well, what made solar affordable to people, because it's not inexpensive, federal tax credits allow people to claim up to 30% of what they spend, and then there's a cost savings from not having to buy so much electricity. And then the electric companies are required to buy the excess energy from the solar household at retail prices. Now, one change that came, and if I get any of this wrong, let me know, Jamie. What change came out of House Bill 227 was that that the solar advocates reportedly, according to a spokesperson for LG&E and KU, you guys had asked for the Kentucky Public Service Commission to determine the value of that excess energy rather than have the legislature set it at the wholesale or actual value of the energy. What's the matter with that? Or is there a problem where the PSC may look at the person with solar panels on their home and go, well, wait a minute, we have to price you as if you are a commercial customer? Is that the discrepancy? Is that the problem you have with this change?
Well, the Public Service Commission language that was added to the bill is purely lipstick on a pig. In reality, it made the bill worse than what it was originally. The current language to it does allow the PSC to weigh in on it, but it specifically restricts the PSC from looking at any benefit that the solar could add to the grid. So as an example, when it's 95 degrees outside and everybody's running their air conditioner at the same time, the utility company, they've sold people these demand conservation devices. Basically, they can turn your air conditioner off and they give you a little bit of a discount to keep that on there. That's to keep them from having to fire off another power generation station, because it's very expensive for them to pick up more generators. So demand conservation is one of the ways that it keeps that from happening. Well, solar just happens to be a peak benefit to the grid during those same times, and it's more beneficial than demand conservation programs. And the irony is the utility bills every customer, using KU as an example, $2 a month to fund their demand conservation programs, where in reality, if we added solar to the grid to our current cap, we would be arguing over 2 cents a month. It'd be a net gain to every meter in the state by about $1.98.
Mm-hmm.
So the PSC language, it's greenwashing. You know, it was one way that they could add some language to the bill to make it seem like they were compromising, but they restrain the compromise to the point of it's worthless, if not a negative to us at this point.
And I guess the legislature can't change what the federal tax credit provides, right? So that would still remain.
We're not arguing over tax credit, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, that's something,
right.
You know, in one of the sessions that I testified, you know, one of the state representatives pointed out that you know, the federal government is subsidizing solar. Well, you know, that's accurate. I will say that. But at the same time, you know, that big solar field on I-64 that they spent $30 million for, the utility got a federal government subsidy on that, too. So in the world of subsidies, the only subsidy is coming from the Fed, and it's a tax subsidy, and it's an even playing field. Every major utility in the state of Kentucky has added solar or plans to add solar as part of their portfolio because solar is good for the utility grid. As I said last time, they're not opposed to solar. They just don't want you to have the ability to generate your own power.
They want to control the power, in your view, the utility companies
sure.
do, instead of me controlling it and then banking off of it, which that then in turn doubles the amount of time it takes me to get my investment back, right?
Right. So right now, if you factor on the federal incentives, the average customer is going to get their money back for their solar investment in 7 to 10 years, you know, depending on your utility usage and other things. If they devalue current net metering, right, so let me back up, make sure your audience understands. So right now, the way the net metering law is for any energy that my solar generates that I don't consume, my meter allows that to flow onto the utility grid, and my meter runs backwards. So for every dollar's worth of electricity I feed the grid, the utility is serving as a bank for me. It's banking a dollar that I will buy back from them at a later time. So it's a trade-off.
When there's no solar, when solar energy is scarce to produce because we got a week of clouds, right?
Exactly, or nighttime or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now electrons don't know any different between being generated from a coal turbine or being generated from a gas turbine or being generated from a solar panel. So the electrons that I'm putting on the utility grid, they're going to the next path of usage, which is my next-door neighbor that's 10 feet away from my house. And the utility is then, in turn, selling that to them at the retail rate. So they're giving me 9 cents a kilowatt hour. It runs through their line to my neighbor, and they're charging him 9 cents. So there's no subsidy or anything else going on. It's a pass-through cost to the utility.
Yeah.
So what they want to do is to devalue net metering, slowing the growth of solar in Kentucky. So for every dollar of electricity I put on the utility grid, they only want to credit me 33 cents, which is the wholesale rate of power that it cost them to generate it 60 miles away at the transmission station.
Mm-hmm.
So in doing that, it takes three times as long for a solar customer to recoup their investment in solar power. And the irony is you know, they want to give me one-third of the energy or the cost of the energy that I'm producing for them. But if you're a time-of-day rate payer, such as large commercial, they're going to charge you three times what their average rate is between 2 and 6 p.m. all summer long, which is when my solar is actually generating the best amount of power. So the quick math is they're going to give me 3 cents per kilowatt hour for the power they're selling at 27. So not exactly fair from our perspective.
You say net metering is not a subsidy, but we've been subsidizing energy, as you referred to, for quite a while. It's probably hard to rewind all of that back, but there's going to be people, I'm sure, in the audience that go, we shouldn't be subsidizing any of this. Let the market decide.
Well, there's not subsidies as much as there is cost shifting.
Yeah.
A great example of this is if you live out on a farm, you know, a mile away from your nearest neighbor, well, the utility isn't charging you any different for your electricity than they are for somebody who's in densely populated downtown Lexington. Well, obviously, there's a whole lot more line feeding that farm, and then more maintenance, and then, you know, transmission losses to that consumer in the middle of nowhere than there is for people who are densely populated. That is a cost shift, you know? So we all get piled into the same bucket, and then they split the cost of power evenly. I mean, the way that the electric company is doing power consumption today, and this is mandated by the Public Service Commission, it is in a word, it's a bit socialized. Because everybody pays the same rate regardless of how expensive your meter is versus my meter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, where you live here in Lexington, where everybody's on, you know, quarter-acre lots, you know, that's good for utility. They like people to be in groups and bunches. But if you're sitting on a 100-acre horse farm and they've got to run lines to you, well, they can't charge you to run those lines. So that person is a more expensive consumer than you are,
mm-hmm.
but you pay the same rate. And that's basically a socialized system.
Is there battery technology that's coming down the road that would enable someone who's installed solar panels to just completely go off the grid and won't then be selling any electricity back to the electric companies? And if so, how far off is that technology?
Well, if that technology comes as quick as it is, the utility is going to be hurting in a big way because there are batteries that are being developed right now, even saltwater batteries, which are really interesting because there's no, you know, no pollution effect from a saltwater battery the way that there could be with lithium ion or lead acid. But the technology is evolving at such a rate that most solar contractors are not comfortable selling batteries today because I don't want to sell you a battery that's obsolete in 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest fear that we've got right now. And if that does happen, if 12, 18, 24 months down the road, batteries make a huge change, huge advancement, then a lot of people are going to be cutting the cord much the way people are with, you know, Time Warner Cable or Spectrum or whoever it is now.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to think, I hear what you're saying, that nobody wants to invest in it now when the technology may become obsolete in a year, but it does sound like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that technology is advancing, and at some point it will be here.
It will.
And will
be sustainable. And I think it's sooner rather than later. Actually, Mitsubishi in Japan is working on a really cool system to where they do two electric cars in your garage, and the solar charges the cars, and then at night the cars power the house. So it's a completely off-grid setup that I think they've got five of those houses there in test mode right now. And, of course, everybody's heard of Elon Musk and Tesla and all the things they're
mm-hmm.
doing. You know, the biggest problem with Tesla is the marketing tends to get out in front of the engineering.
Yeah, right. You're right. It does seem to, because they're making all these predictions like it's going to be tomorrow and we're going to embrace all this and we're going to be ready for all this. And
there's going to be a breakthrough and it's going to be monumental and it's going to happen sooner rather than later. But, you know, it's like everything else. I mean, it's hard to believe the iPhone is only 10 years old and today's iPhone has 10 times the computing capability of IBM's Big Blue that took up two floors of office building, you know, 50 years ago.
Isn't that amazing? And so would this battery technology, would it only be available to solar customers?
No. There are some interesting things happening out west. You know, California is, from an energy perspective, one of the neediest states that we've got. And there's actually some of their co-op utilities. And I want to make sure that people understand. We have different types of utility companies in the state of Kentucky. We've got what's called the investor-owned utility, which is your Kentucky Utilities, Duke Energy, Kentucky Power. Most of those are owned by for-profit corporations that have home offices out of Kentucky, potentially even out of the United States. The co-op utilities are like Bluegrass Energy, Clark Energy, Owen Electric. There is a much different perspective when we're having these conversations between the for-profit companies and the co-ops, which are actually owned by the people in their lines.
Mm-hmm.
So
the
co-ops have actually been a lot kinder and gentler in their message in this whole solar conversation than the for-profit utilities have.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just and I got to wrap up here. I know you have it. There's a vote coming up tomorrow in the Senate. Is this a vote to move it out of the Energy Committee?
Right. Well, there's a potential vote. It has not been scheduled yet, but we expect that it will be. And if it is, it's to get it out of the committee. One quick thing before you go. One mm-hmm. thing that I want to make really, really clear, because I've had tons of people questioning, you know, is this about coal? Does it have anything to do with coal?
Right.
It has absolutely zero to do with coal, and anybody that says it does is very misinformed. A very interesting fact about this, one of the lead lobbying groups on the other side of this are funded by the natural gas lobby. Well, something that people may not know in Kentucky is 10 years ago, we were 93% dependent on coal for our power generation. Today, we're only 64% on coal. Natural gas has taken over 30% of the coal jobs away from Kentucky.
Yeah.
And natural gas is trying to kill solar in its infancy in Kentucky. So,
but the coal companies do support this Gooch's legislation, do they not?
Well, and it's because the utilities, which ironically, you know, Kentucky Utilities is now owned by Louisville Gas and Electric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the gas company now owns the electric company. Would the gas company rather buy coal from Kentucky coal mines, or would they rather use their gas to generate electricity with turbines?
Yeah, right.
So, you know, gas is the hidden link to this that a lot of people aren't picking up. But this is a pretty heavy agenda from the gas company, but the gas company owns the electric company, so, and the coal companies are dependent on the electric company, so it's kind of like, you know, the Chamber of Commerce is in favor of this bill. Well, the only reason they are is KU gives them $50,000 a year of their budget. Of course they're going to be in favor of whatever KU wants them to be. They're beholden to them, and it's not that they're not all good people. It's just, you know, I mean, when you're a not-for-profit organization and one of your largest investors tells you to vote some way, you don't have a lot of choice.
And just in a few seconds, this bill's gotten a lot of noise in a session that's been dominated by pension. But yet this is probably next to that, the bill we've heard the most about and has been written the most about. Why do you think that is?
Well, it did not take the cleanest path through the House of Representatives. It got pulled back to committee a couple of times, and you know, I know the Herald Leader, Tom Eblen with the Herald Leader, called it shameless, the way that it came out of the House. So it's not exactly something that a lot of folks are proud of. And, you know, we got a lot of really good state senators. Currently, the committee chair on this is Jared Carpenter out of Madison County, Berea, and southern Fayette County. He has really been working hard to be fair and equitable to all parties. So the thing I'd like to ask people to do is to call the state Senate. The legislative message line is 1-800-372-7181. First and foremost, we want to thank Jared Carpenter for his hard work and ask him, you know, to continue to work hard to make sure this bill is fair and equitable, or to kill it and kick it to next year. And then any of the senators that are on the House or the Senate Natural Resources Committee, if 100 people made that call between now and tomorrow, it would make a big difference. So when people say their vote doesn't count, it counts more than any time than right now for Kentucky's renewable energy future.
That's House Bill 227. Jamie Clark has been the leading spokesperson against this legislation. We'll keep an eye on it, Jamie, and thank you for your time this afternoon.